ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the UI Breakfast Podcast. I'm your host, Jane Portman, and today our special guest is Nathan Powell, designer and founder of Nusi, proposal software, and surprisingly, we're going to talk about proposals today. Hey, Nathan.
Hey, Jane. How are you doing?
Doing fantastic. Thanks for making it today.
No problem. Great to be here with you.
Fantastic. So to kick off our conversation, we're going to do a Blitz questionnaire, and you're going to answer 5 questions about who you are and where you come from. Is that fine?
Okay, go for it.
Great. So, Nathan, what do you do for a living?
I am the, as you said, designer founder of Nusi. I actually began life as a freelance designer way back in 2007. And since 2013, when I initially launched Nusi, it's been building slowly. So I've been moving slowly away from the freelance design and concentrating more on being a sort of a founder and a trying to grow Nusi. And I flit every now and again back into freelance design, but that's pretty much where I am now, is trying to build and grow Nusi.
Great. How did you get there? Not that you didn't answer that yet, but
how did I get to Nusi?
I guess to both. How did you come up with the concept of Nusi? What was your life journey before that? Anything?
Well, I began designing in 2005. Within a year and a half, 2 years, I was freelancing. I was never great at working for somebody else, so freelancing seemed to be the way to go. And of course, anybody who's working for themselves, anybody who's working for an agency, needs to send out design proposals. And it was never a part of the journey that I enjoyed at all. It was probably my least favorite part of any new project. And I was, you know, being a designer, my main tool at the time then for creating proposals was InDesign, which is a fantastic tool, obviously a fantastic design layout tool. The only thing was that it would take me forever to create each proposal. You know, I would have my design template. I was obviously very focused on the design of the template then. But of course, each time a new project would come up, you'd need to go and dig out your previous template. You know, you would have certain content that you would reuse, other content that would obviously be written from scratch, depending on what the project was. You know, you'd have to go through and find all those reusable sections. You'd have to dig through the content. Then, of course, you'd have to create the PDF. Then you'd have to email it, send it as an attachment, you know, worry about whether anybody had received it, whether they got it, opened it, signed it, got back to you, changes. Of course, InDesign is an awesome magazine layout tool, essentially. But when you have to keep going back and making small changes, recreate another new PDF, send it back out again, see have they opened it, have they received it, sign it again. It was a really convoluted process. And, you know, I was also at the stage in my career where I was wanting to start to build products. You know, I'd sort of dabbled with my first book, self-published book, which was The Designer's Guide to Freelancing. I'd messed around with a couple of things, but nothing had really worked out. And this for me was a huge pain point. Like I said, you know, I really despised doing proposals, and the system that I was using was flawed, to say the least. I tried some of the solutions that were available at the time. This was back in sort of 2012, 2013, and nothing that really sort of fit my needs, or nothing that I liked from a design or usability aspect. So basically I thought, well, you know, some people say it's good to scratch your own itch, some people say it's not good to scratch your own itch, but I scratched my own itch. And from there sort of began to think about how this might work, and sort of coming up with initial design for the MVP, and things kind of went from there, really.
Great. And as of today, what does your typical day look like?
My typical day looks like, I no longer have a typical day. When I was a freelancer, I had a typical day. It was far more structured when I was freelancing. Now, Nusi is at the point, we're still growing, you know, we still need to grow a lot more, but we're at that point where we are also far more relaxed in our structure. We have a lot more freedom now. I know I have a lot more freedom now to be able to do what I like to do during the day. So generally I would get up in the morning, first thing I do is check support, because I still do support. Both Michael, myself and Michael, my co-founder, Michael Koper, we both still do support. So that would be the first thing in the morning. Then pretty much, you know, same as everyone else who's out there building or freelancing, you know, I have my list for the day of things. Fortunately, that list gets shorter now as time goes by. Don't get me wrong, there is still a huge number of things to do. But I, like I said, I have that freedom now to be able to sort of almost choose my battles, because I'm not limited to a time frame now as I was with freelancing. You know, the client project has to be delivered by, you know, this date. Updates need to be made by then, because this is ongoing, it's continual. You know, it's the long haul. Like I said, it's Nusi began life in its original form in 2013, so it's just an ongoing thing. And to use a phrase that doesn't command an awful lot of respect anymore, Nusi has almost become like a lifestyle business. While we're not millionaires yet, we have a fantastic lifestyle built around the product we have. So, you know, for me, it means I can spend time with my family. It means I can get out on my mountain bike, which is pretty much my biggest passion outside of the computer. It just means I can, you know, have some kind of life outside of the computer, which when I was freelancing, I didn't have so much. I was very much focused on being sat on the computer from, you know, the beginning of the day till the end of the day, trying to get projects out on time and stressing where the next client was coming from. This is, you know, this has given me a lot more freedom.
That's fantastic. I'm so happy for you.
Yeah, me too.
This is a really nice, neat phase of business, and you're done with the basic chores, you know, setting up everything, and now you can just kind of nurture your bonsai of a business.
Yeah, I mean, don't get me wrong, the growth side is obviously the hardest, is the hardest bit, you know, once you realize you actually have a product that people want to use and that people enjoy using. So the marketing and the growth is obviously a big thing, but, you know, it's not a race against the clock. You know, it's ongoing, it's steady, it's testing things, it's trying, you know, and seeing what results come back, and then working off of that and going on to something else. So yeah, there's certainly a lot more freedom now in where we are than perhaps where we were or where I was as a freelancer 3 or 4 years ago.
Great. So between all these activities, what do you enjoy the most and the least about your work?
The most is actually when I get to go back to being a designer, because, you know, when Nusi was kicking off, there was obviously the entire app and everything around that, the website, the marketing had to be designed, you know, and I'm a designer, that's what I enjoy doing. But of course, things do slow down once you have the initial app set up, you know, the website sort of more or less set up. Obviously, these things always grow and they always change, but that change and that growth is a lot slower after that initial period, that initial build, that initial, excuse me, stage of development. So when we do go back, or when I do go back to get to design new features, that's when I remember why I'm doing what I do.
Right.
It's, you know, it's fun, and you get to experiment, and you get to sort of to riff of what you're doing. And that for me is still the most fun side, because it's less and less now. You know, I'm sure that anybody that is a sort of a designer, whether that's, you know, a freelancer or working for somebody else, I think it's, you know, you think as a designer, I'm always going to be designing. But when you start running your own business, or at least for me, it was a huge sort of aha moment or an eye opener, was I never realized how much writing would be involved in being a business. So like everything, and I know you can relate to this, and I'm sure that pretty much everyone, you know, listening can relate to this, is my business became, you know, being a writer. Design was kind of pushed to the back, and everything around running a business was writing, you know, whether you're writing marketing, you're writing to people, you're writing tutorials, you know, you're writing newsletters, you're writing emails. Boy, there's a hell of a lot of writing that goes on behind running a business. And that was the part I came to hate most.
Really awesome. I go around doing interviews about UI UX design quite often. Mm-hmm. And so they ask me, like, what is your biggest discovery of the profession? And I'd always tell them, you know, I could never imagine that writing matters so much. Like, And I hear exact same words from you. It is so, so true. And it's a bunch of work.
Yeah, totally. And if, you know, and if you begin life as a pretty mediocre sort of, if you begin life as not being a particularly good writer, you can guarantee that after, you know, a year or two, your writing will improve greatly because you will be spending so much time writing.
True, so true. What is your next big thing, or maybe what's the next big thing for Nusi?
The next big thing for Nusi is we're going to be adding some more design templates at the moment. My whole concept of Nusi was I want to be spending as little time as possible writing proposals so I can actually get on with doing work at the time, which was design work. So Nusi from the beginning was always going to be a minimalist proposal software sort of vibe. And we've maintained that. So some people like it and some people don't, because you basically, you plug in, you have your editor and you have your design template output, and that's it. You know, get it in, get done, get out, carry on with your life. So it's been that from the beginning, but now we're getting to the stage where, you know, we want to add some more design templates so that people can actually have a choice. So that's going to be happening shortly.
And that's great. Yeah. I can tell you want to do more design work. I can tell.
Like I said, you know, those rare occasions when I actually go back to being a designer is always nice. It feels like I'm back home again. And another area which is interesting that has come up and we're going to be working on shortly is, and we would never have got to this without actually launching, you know, those two, three years ago and having customers, is that proposals are obviously an important part, but proposals are perhaps maybe a first step in the direction of a project, you know, because obviously after you sign the proposal, then you might have a separate contract, you might have NDAs, you know, changing agreements, things that go out, you know, information coming back, SOPs. And, you know, we've had a lot of requests over the last couple of years for customers of Nusi to be able to make that second step. So what we're going to be doing is adding a document side to Nusi, mm-hmm. so that it will work as, it's certainly not an all-round solution, because that's not our intention, that's not the way we're going. It's still going to be proposals, but it's going to allow you to say, to be able to say, right, we've sent out this proposal to Steve, he's accepted, so let's get the contract out straight out to him, because he's signed already. That's going to go out, that's going to get signed, it's going to come back, and it's all going to be stored within Steve's customer data, so you can see that everything that's gone out to Steve or to his agency now and over the last 12 months, over the last year, and you can see exactly what they've been doing, what they've been signing, how much money you've been making with them, you know, are they a valuable client, you know, financially, etc. And so that's going to be the next big thing we're going to work on. So we're pretty excited about that.
Yeah, that's pretty big.
Yeah.
I'd like to highlight to our audience who are, you know, product people and UX designers that the value of such services like Nathan's proposal service and Nathan's document service that's coming up. It's not just the transactional convenience that it gets, but also the, you know, the value and the content, the presets and templates inside, because you now are no longer standing in the dark. You can use a certain structure. You can use certain, you know, reusable fragments for your business. And I think that's where content meets shape, kind of thing, inside the SaaS business.
Yeah, and I think there are two groups of people that basically come to proposal software. There are those that are completely new to writing proposals, and for them, that template, that content is gold for them. And in fact, it's beyond gold. It's completely necessary, because they mm-hmm. don't know where to begin. They don't know perhaps maybe the structure they should be using or the content they should be giving out. And then, of course, there's the second group of, you know, consultants or agencies who have been writing proposals for a long time, and then, of course, you know, have their own content or want to create something from scratch, but you still have that built-in design template, which is going to allow you to get things out the door in far less time.
Absolutely. So we're done with the questionnaire, but before we dive into the main topic, we've got a sponsor today. And coincidentally, this is our first sponsorship, and it's Remark, and by some stroke of luck, you know, it's a piece of software that Nathan helped to design a few years ago. Is that right, Nathan?
Yeah, it's a huge coincidence. When you said that when we first came online, I was like, wow, it's a small world.
But it's not intentional, I swear.
That's right. Yeah. A few years back, I worked on that.
So today's episode is brought to you by Remark. You might be sending out documents and proposals that are, you know, reflect the thousands of dollars, but do they actually look like that? But the last thing you want to do is fight the formatting tools to make them look good. Remark, with a Q in the end, helps you focus on content and transform your markdown simple text into a fantastic, professional-looking PDF document that you can send over as a report, you can send over as a proposal to your clients. So it allows you to focus 100% on delivering valuable advice while it takes care of all the tedious formatting. It's perfect for delivering high-quality proposals and reports so that look professional every time. Try Remark today. Visit remark.io with a Q. That's remark.io. And use the coupon code UIBREAKFAST to receive a lifetime permanent 20% discount. So I swear by every word that I just said, because Jeremy's the founder of Remark, is a good friend of ours, and he's a fantastic founder. I would like to tell you a story that we all are members of a productized consulting roundtable, and I know that many of the consultants use the templates, probably designed by Nathan, to submit their reports. And this is where, you know, again, form meets function. So, Nathan, what do you think of Remark?
it's really quite bizarre that Jeremy's Remark should be your first sponsor while I'm a guest on. That's pretty weird and pretty cool at the same time. Yeah, I mean, Jeremy, I think it was probably a couple of years back now. Did indeed design the initial sort of templates and website and the app as well at the time. I'm sure it's probably changed considerably since then. But I know that Jeremy was also trying to step up and face that problem of, like you're saying, of formatting documents that were going out to customers and not wanting to, you know, sort of redesign the wheel every single time. So I know that Jeremy is obviously was a great developer, and I'm sure he's probably doing a great job there on tackling the formatting those documents and getting them looking great every time they go out.
Yep. I have to confess that I don't use Remark because I'm a design nerd or freak, control freak or something like that. But I do have a lot of hassle with InDesign whenever I have to send out a proposal or even a receipt. So I use a special hacker script to import my markdown content into InDesign, which is a big mess, trust me. So this is like a way better solution. And Nathan's Nusi as well. So, proposals are an inevitable part of every design project, and not the most pleasant one. And I know you wrote multiple books on that. Mm-hmm. So tell us, what's the best way to tackle that?
I think, like I said, the biggest pain is actually the sort of the physical process of back and forth, digging out content, getting all that content in the right place. But moving aside from that, you know, and basically saying, well, you should go with automatic proposal software, you know, aside from that, you know, whether you should or whether you shouldn't, if you want to actually be writing sort of proposals that are going to win you projects, regardless of how you get those proposals out, you know, there are certain things that you need to be looking at. And I think many freelancers, many consultants, and many agencies that are perhaps less experienced in the proposal process generally tend to just jump on any lead that comes through the door, you know, because I'm a freelancer, I specialize in web design, or I specialize in HTML5, or I specialize in WordPress or whatever it is. So a client comes to me with a request for, you know, I need a new website. I hear you're a website designer. Can you help me? They have your budget. And so you immediately say, yes, you know, a website is going to cost you X amount of dollars. And of course, you know, we all like to pay the bills. We all like to eat. You know, we all like to do these things. So we just say, okay. Any email that comes through from a client usually says, hey, we need a new website design. It needs to have an about page. It needs to have a contact. It needs to have a landing page. And that, how much is it going to cost? You know, and for a lot of perhaps less experienced designers or less experienced business people, you know, they know that, okay, this is going to take me X amount of hours, or I have a set price for a landing page, or I have a set price. And so they just put together their proposal template and they send it out. If they're lucky, they've got the budget, so they know they're within budget. And if more than likely they haven't got the budget, because that's one of the biggest mistakes that people make, is writing a proposal without a budget. And it goes out and you begin to play this numbers game, because you're just sending out a template, you're sending out a price, you're sending out, essentially you're sending out a quote. But what you're not doing is you're not creating any personal connection. You're not creating any value. You're not creating anything that makes that customer, that potential customer, want to work with you apart from price. And if all you're selling on is price, then you're competing with hundreds, if not thousands, of other designers and agencies out there. I think we really, designers and agencies, really need to step back from, you know, what makes a good proposal, or how should I design a proposal, or what should go in. They need to step back before they even get that far. And I mean, I'm a big, big fan, and I think what turned things around for me on the sort of proposal front, in going from winning, you know, every other or one in three, to going, you know, up to winning 9 out of 10 proposals, is actually spending time up front with this customer, with this client, seeing whether you can actually help them, whether they have the budget. You know, there are just client interviews play a huge part in knowing about whether you can help a client, whether you should, and whether they're going to take you on at the end of it. I don't know if any of that makes sense, but I think it's just, there are so many freelancers and studios that will just automatically jump onto a proposal. Hey, I need a website. Fine. It's going to cost you this much. And then they don't get it. And then they wonder why. You know, you need to sit down with these customers beforehand and just actually talk to them and see if you can help them. You know, ask them why they need this new website. You know, what problem is it going to solve? You know, what happens if this project doesn't go ahead? You know, how is it going to affect your business? You know, what are you hoping is going to come of this? You know, what's going to be the end goal? Of course, do you have a budget range? You know, if they don't have a budget, if they don't want to give you a budget, don't even write the proposal. This is, you know, I'm willing to bet that 9 out of 10 people that send out proposals and don't get them accepted is because they never found out the budget in the first place. I mean, I've been guilty of it. I'm sure you've been guilty of it. I think I still am from time to time.
I think,
yeah, and it's a difficult one, you know, because we don't like to ask, because we don't want to, you know, we don't always want to hear the answer, you know. Well, you know, what budget range, you know, or what budget do you have in mind? How much are you, you know, looking to invest in this? And without asking this question, without knowing this, you really are setting yourself up to fail. But these are questions, uncomfortable questions often, at least when you're first beginning to talk to customers, before you even get to the proposal stage, that a lot of people never ask and are too scared to ask. And I think this is the first place, this is the very first step to take when you're writing a proposal, actually talking to the customer and talking in depth.
Mm-hmm. So essentially what we're saying here is that the proposals are not the first stage. The first stage is an extensive client interview where you establish personal relationship and you ask all these hard business related questions. And, you know, your price in the eyes of the client, it grows exponentially if you ask the right business questions. So don't skip on that stage by any means.
Completely. And I think the proposal, you know, and I think one of the biggest fears perhaps about, you know, for people who are perhaps new to writing proposals or not so confident about writing proposals, is that they think proposals have to be something really big, something really long, something complicated. You know, they have to be designed in such a format, they have to use really big words. And, you know, it's just really not the case, because a proposal is almost, while the proposal is the beginning of a project, it's almost the final step in everything you learn up to that point with that client. Proposals are actually very easy to write once you have a rough idea of how you can help that client, what the actual problems of that client are, because all you're essentially doing in a proposal is reflecting back everything you've discussed with that client. It's very rare that you inject anything new into a proposal. You certainly never pitch in a proposal. The only thing you're pitching in a proposal are things that you've already discussed. It's another big sort of place where a lot of people fall down is they have these big, you know, maybe they do have these conversations with a client. You know, the client has a series of problems. So what do? We finish that conversation. We go away. We think about all these amazing ideas that we can have to help the client. And then we go back and pitch them in a proposal. But, you know, this is the first time the client's ever hearing about them. They have no idea exactly what you're pitching or how it's going to help. And it's a proposal really is just a reflection of everything you've discussed in a client interview or a series of client interviews.
Mm-hmm. So interesting that that kind of contradicts a little bit with one of my beliefs or maybe wrong habits, because you are saying that a proposal should be a down-to-earth description of matters that you already familiarize the client with. And one of my favorite parts in proposals is that, you know, closing section when you can wildly fantasize about the client's project if you had like unlimited resources, which by no means is a pitch. It's just, you know, where you let your imagination run free and where all your thoughts are not yet, tired with that implementation problem or anything like that.
I think that does have a place, but I think my thoughts deal slightly differently with that. Mm-hmm. So you know the problem, you know you can deal with the problem, you know that you can actually help the client improve their situation because of the conversations you've had. I learned over a long period of time that by giving your client options, you were essentially broadening the chances of having your proposal accepted, right? So mm-hmm. once you know that your client's budget is, say, $5,000, you know that obviously whatever the solution is you're offering, as long as it falls within what you're willing to work for, the solution obviously needs to fall within $5,000, but that's going to be limited to, you know, the sort of perhaps bare bones. You know, I need a website designed. It needs to contain this. It needs to do that. It also needs to fulfill these business needs and these business functions. But as long as it falls within $5,000, then you're golden. You know, as long as you've developed this sort of relationship with the client, as long as you've understood what they need and how you can actually help, then the chances are, you know, you're in a good place to get that proposal accepted for $5,000. But then you can take that a step further, because a lot of times clients will actually shop around. You know, we're all familiar with this. We're all scared about this. Well, they're going to be talking to five other designers, or they're going to be talking to five other agencies, you know, so therefore maybe I should, you know, look at my pricing, or this is way too expensive. I need to drop it down. I need to, you know, because I'm only offering one solution. Because so essentially, if you only offer one price, you're giving a yes or no scenario to your client. It's like, you know, does this work for you? Yes or no. And that's it. If it doesn't work, then obviously you've lost the proposal. But if you give them a few options, like tiered pricing in SaaS, mm-hmm. then you can say, look, this is the first option. This more than covers everything that we spoke about, and it comes in under your budget. But you know what? I've been thinking, and here's where I finally get back to what you were saying. You know, I've been thinking, actually, I could probably, you know, increase the value of what I can offer to you, you know, greatly by adding this, this, and this to you. And these aren't just line items that have just suddenly occurred. Well, do you know what? I could actually just do this. You actually have to think about, you know, how could I actually add more value to this? You know, and you can pretty much guarantee that these are things that the client hasn't thought about, you know, because when they just come to you for an initial web design, all they're worried about is getting up a great looking website that increases trial signups, for example. But then you can take it a step further and say, well, do you know what? Let's get that website up. We're going to increase those trial conversions, you know, but at the same time, we're going to help you with ongoing marketing. You know, we're going to help you to get that podcast set up, you know, which is going to bring, you know, circle back around to trial signups and things. And this is going to be a second pricing option. It's not going to be by line items. Run away from line items very quickly. This is going to be a summary of a second package. It's going to bring even more value, and it's going to cost you X. And then mm-hmm. if you like, you can even take it a step further into the sort of fantasy field and like, you mm-hmm. know, I would really, really like to be able to do this for you, you know, and I think this could be fantastic. You know, it could really, really take your business. You know, it's to all these places you've dreamed of and all places that I'm dreaming of as a designer as well. And it's going to cost you X, you know, so you can get those options in. You can get that sort of sense of, okay, we haven't discussed this, but it's something I've been thinking of. And it's something I think could greatly benefit your business. You know, this is not just me trying to, you know, push more money on you, because if you just try and push more money on them, sorry, increase their budget, and they don't actually see any of the benefits, then you're never going to see from them, you know, you're never going to see them again. So, you know, giving pricing options to your clients, and this Nusi was built around this whole ethos because it was what I came from, you know, saying pricing option A, B or C, then, you know, the choice, you're giving choice, you're giving options to them, and they're far more likely to accept your proposal. And don't always think that they're going to go for the cheapest either, because very often this isn't the case.
Absolutely. And, you know, the golden rule of that is never compete on pricing and never negotiate on your rate or your own price that you set. Negotiate on scope. So the feeling that you want to evoke with your proposal is like, oh my goodness, they're so amazing. They understand my business so well. I wonder what we can do together that fits my budget. Like, that's how I work with clients. And that's like the best that you can get, actually. So strive for that, not for, you know, the commodity pricing, especially one tier without any options.
Nathan, completely.
Totally right.
And I think that's why a lot of people who, you know, when you first start doing proposals, perhaps the only thing you've ever seen that comes close to a proposal is a quote. You know, maybe the builder's come round, or, you know, you've had to have the house repaired or something, and you see that standard traditional quote where everything is a line item, and associated to every line item is a price. And it's very difficult to see the value in any work when it's just line item price, line item price, line item price, and total. But when you actually begin to sell those pricing, you know, tiered pricing or pricing options, however you prefer to call them, you know, you wouldn't actually list all these things out. What you would do is you would talk about the things you're going to do for this price and how you're actually going to, you know, help that company to get to where they need to be. Because when you do that line pricing, that traditional quote pricing, you're inviting the client to actually tear that pricing apart. And say, well, do you know what? Actually, I don't think we need that initial investigation, because, you know, I could save myself $2,000. So let's just take that bit out of there. I'm not sure we need the ongoing, you know, updates or whatever. That's not a good fit right now. So we'll take that out. You know, if you put this all together as a pricing option, say, hey, you know, Steve, I'm going to help your business to do this. And it's going to include all these things. You're just not listing them out. And then you're giving a final price and you're saying it's going to cost you $5,000. That way you're selling on the value and you're not selling on, you know, a list of services and prices.
Definitely. And since we're talking about what proposals should not look like, they should not look like, you know, purchase itinerary or something like that. What should they look like? What are the typical structure? What is the typical structure? Maybe you could give a very brief overview of the main, you know, chapters or parts that are usually seen in every proposal.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think pretty much everyone would give you a different definition of sort of sections that should be included in the proposal, but basically, you're not looking to write War and Peace. I guarantee you're not looking to write War and Peace. You definitely don't need that. And in fact, if you do, you're probably going to get rejected because nobody's going to read it. All they're going to do is skip to the pricing and that's going to be it. Game over. Perhaps those 50-page proposals might work for huge government agencies who have to deal with all that crap. But, you know, for a designer, a consultant, a small agency, a business, you know, who are actually dealing with people, and not government or financial bodies, they want to be able to read something. They want to be able to read that a person has written it. They want to be able to understand it, and they want to be able to understand that you understand them. That's it. That's the basis for how you should write. You should include language that your client has used. This is why I sort of always push for client interviews to be recorded, because you can go back to this. Obviously, check with your client before doing this. Actually include language that they've included. And again, this is going to give the sort of feeling of, hey, he gets me, understands me, he knows what I'm talking about. But when you're actually getting towards structure, First of all, when you're naming a proposal, this sounds very simple, but when you're naming it, don't just say proposal for Acme Incorporated. You know, actually give a clue as to what you're going to be doing in the proposal. You know, are you going to be helping increase trial signups for Acme? Are you going to be reducing bounce rate? You know, whatever that is, you know, give a clue in the title, because think about those blog post titles that stop you in your tracks and actually make you want to read something. Well, it's a similar deal, because imagine you are one of five agencies who are sending out a proposal and yours just says proposal for Acme. Well, you know, it doesn't create that great first impression. Mm-hmm. So there are a couple of things you want to be thinking about. Typically, we've seen over the last few years in NUSI that over 80% of proposals that are accepted contain between 5 and 8 sections or pages. So NUSI works in sections. The traditional way to go is in pages, but regardless, it's between 5 to 8 if you really want to see those acceptance rates increase. Usually what I'll do is, if I think, I'm not so much now, but years ago I would always give a brief intro section. A lot of people don't bother because you've already had that relationship built up. But if you think that you could perhaps be competing with other agencies or other consultants, it's not necessarily a bad way to go, you know, just to remind them who they're talking to. But if you feel that there is a solid relationship, then you can just sort of pretty much start and saying, it's almost like an intro note, you know, like an email when you'd send along the proposal saying, hey, you know, it was great to speak to you. You know, I've been thinking about what you've been talking about, and, you know, this is how I see the problem. So you always have essentially the problem. That's what you want to discuss, obviously. The problem is the problem that they've come to you with. You can talk about problems that you have being able to find as an extension of what they've told you. But the problem, again, is always the problem they've come to you with. So, you know, our bounce rate is too high on our landing page, and therefore signups are decreasing or whatever. So that's the problem they came to you with. From there, you can go to other areas, because, you know, this could actually come from so many areas. You know, why is the bounce rate so high? There could be dozens of reasons for this. But that's basically, you want to explain the global problem, the reason they came to you for. From there, you can jump into sort of exploring solutions, looking at ways that you think you can be helping them. You want to be able to always be referring back to the conversations you've had, always look back to things that they've said, always look back to the language they've had. And I have to be honest, I think my proposals have gotten shorter and shorter over the years because I've spent more and more time with the clients up front. And like I said, because it is only a reflection of everything you've spoken about, it can actually be very short indeed. You can almost jump from exploring solutions to those pricing options. I know some people like to put in a couple of extra stages, but I think if you have developed that that relationship, then that's fine. You can jump straight from, you know, these are the problems, these are some possible solutions, and this is actually how I can help you with these pricing options. And these pricing options, again, you know, they could be 1, 2, 3, they could be 1 or 2. I'd never have less than 2, you know, and 3 is great. But how you actually lay out these pricing options as well, you want to be talking. Again, you don't want to be listing out anything. You actually want to be talking about in paragraphs. You know, you're writing, you're telling them about this. I mean, I've got a proposal in front of me right now, which is a 1 of 3 options. And there are 1, 2, 3, 4, 6 paragraphs about what that option will do, what that pricing option will do to help that person get their landing page up, to help those trial signups to come up, etc. You know, so concentrate on those pricing options being paragraphs, being just talking to a person, not listing out anything. And then I think once you've got past those pricing options, you can just go to what would be, you know, next steps, and actually tell somebody exactly what they need to do to get mm-hmm. the ball rolling, to get it done. Don't just presume that people are going to say, okay, yeah, this is great, let's go ahead, you know, people are always wanting to know, tell me what I need to do, make life easy for me. So, I mean, I always encourage people to say, you know, in your next steps, tell them, in the case of Nusi, obviously, to click on the accept proposal button, tell them if you need, you know, a deposit, tell them where they need it to be sent, you know, and of course, any other further questions to get in touch. You really want to be as, you know, as transparent as you can be. So, like I said, I mean, it's 5 to 8 sections. It's usually, you know, setting the scene. It's usually the problem. It's usually possible solutions to the problem. Then your pricing options. Please, always pricing options, not just a price. And then the next steps. And it's as simple as that, you know. It doesn't need to be any longer. It really doesn't. If you feel it needs to be longer, then you haven't done a good enough job up front. You don't know enough about your client. That it sounds harsh, but that's it.
Yeah, that's so true. A few more notes. You really want to be, like, recapping, you really want to be talking plain English,
mm-hmm.
Coming from yourself. And even if you're formalizing a little bit, it's still human voice. And for goodness sake, tie it to business benefits. Because I think the key to entire consulting success is to tie your activity and your craft to some business output. And for designers, it's not always so direct, but you can always tie design to conversions. You can always tie design to customer retention, to churn, to, you know, support costs, anything like that, that helps. It doesn't have to be cash evaluation of that benefit, but if it obviously complements, then it's a wonderful, wonderful point to be on your proposal.
Completely. And I know a lot of designers do struggle with that because they say, well, you know, I don't know. I don't know how it's going to improve. You know, I'm hoping it's going to improve because, you know, I'm a great designer, or, you know, I know about the business side of things as well. So I know that they need to, you know, increase this or decrease that. But like you said, there is always a way that you can sort of phrase it. You can talk, and after talking to the customer, you would have found out as well how you can help them. But it is easy. It is easy enough as a designer to be able to sell on the business gains rather than just on, hey, I'm a great designer, I'm going to give you a great looking page design. Because at the end of the day, a great looking design doesn't mean anything if you can't leave your customer in a better place than they were yesterday.
Absolutely. And also, for goodness sake, please don't talk about yourself as much as you're talking about the customer. Because if you make it about them, like, this is number one rule that's kind of obvious, but I just want to recap. If you make it about them, they're going to love reading about it. They're going to love exploring the options. They're going to love, you know, learning the price tags. Because people do love price tags. You know, they want to associate things with economic situation. So they're going to enjoy it. And even if they don't have a budget, nonetheless, you'll be winning the situation.
That's a great point. I mean, I never spoke about myself at all in any of the proposals. I mean, at all, apart from possibly that intro section, just to remind customers that perhaps didn't have such a huge relationship with. But outside of that, yeah, I mean, you don't have to talk to yourself about yourself at all. You know, like I said before, if you are still having to sort of convince people of your design prowess or your business prowess at this late stage in the game, you haven't done your homework. You haven't, you know, this potential customer should already know by now that you can do the work, you know, that you can get this done. This is just a reflection of everything you've spoken about with those pricing options, with those options of, well, we can take you this far, we can take you this far, or you know what, we can take you all the way to here.
Mm-hmm. And in a few more ideas that you can do, in addition to, you know, going up in price, what I often use is going down in the budget and taking like only a fair share of their budget to provide strategic guidance, and then saying that they can delegate the rest of it to someone who has lower rate and can just do everyday work.
Mm-hmm.
And that has proved fantastic. So like whenever I can actually reduce my involvement, I consider that a good win because people are still getting that value.
Yeah, completely. It's a great way to go around it as well. And in fact, I've done that myself as well. You say, you know what, I can do this for you, and it's going to be at this price. But if you want, hand it off to someone else as well. I'll give you the initial layout or whatever, and that's going to be even more economical for you. And that's also a great way to go.
Mm-hmm. Also, you can tie in recurring services as an addition or as part of the packages or something like that. And that's a great way to build your revenue.
Yeah, totally. And it's something we built into Nuci as well. So we, you know, you can do all these sort of optional pricing, do these one-offs, you can do recurring, you know, so you have a retainer type system. You know, anything, anytime that you can guarantee some kind of repeat or recurring revenue, you know, mm-hmm. even though you're a designer and not a SaaS, you know, obviously it's great for you. You have that flux of money coming in all the time. And even if it's working as, you know, as you said, as almost as an advisor or an initial design that they hand down then to perhaps more junior designers, there are so many ways for you to be able to sell a product or your services to somebody else in need. I think it's just thinking a little more about the business side of things than just, and this is the age old sort of lesson that a lot of freelancers take such a long time to learn, is that, do you know what, I'm not just a technician, I actually have business acumen and I can help you grow your business. And once you make that change, that everything changes for you. What you can offer, what you realize you can offer can change, because I'm sure before you realized that you could offer strategy advice and business advice, and I'm sure your world changed completely because you went from having to do absolutely everything and hold the customer's hand and design everything to just being able to say, do you know what, this is gonna benefit your business, you know, far greater than, you know, it could do if I was doing everything for you.
Yeah. And one last thing I'd love to recap today. A few ways to actually eliminate proposals. Like, frankly speaking, I have not written a proposal in a few years as of today. Mm-hmm. And I have a few things that kind of take place. First is strategy calls. I have them for $300 now that kind of get my foot in the door and make everything so much easier that we can kind of even skip on proposals sometimes. The other thing is productized consulting, which is essentially the same proposal writing. You just do it once on a sales page mm-hmm. and put a price tag on it independent of a certain client. You still have to highlight the same exact business benefits, the same exact problems. It just has to be more universe to be applicable to everyone. I think mm-hmm. that's really a way to go. You save a lot of time doing that. And one more thing is road mapping, which is kind of get paid to put together a proposal thing, you know?
Yeah.
Do you have, do you plan any support on that in Nuci? What's your own take on productized consulting?
We actually have productized consulting businesses that use Nuci mm-hmm. to send out their proposals, because obviously, like you said, you do have your sales page and you do have your price published on the sales page, usually. But then they still send out the offer to that client, and that client needs to sign on the dotted line, because there are so many agencies out there, especially once you move up the chain a little, that need everything signed on the dotted line with mm-hmm. a copy in the system, you know? So once perhaps you move away from small business customers, then I think regardless almost of the way you work or what you work, there are a certain proportion of customers out there that will need something signed, you know, whether you refer to that as a proposal or a roadmap or a contract. There's always something that's going to need to be signed. So, I mean, do we accommodate for those kind of things in Nuci? Essentially, it's the same system, you know, regardless of how you're going about it. Mm-hmm. I can write out a roadmap, or I can write out a proposal or a design strategy, and they're all going to be in a similar format and get accepted and signed and then be in somebody else's system as well as your own. I think it's tricky. I mean, I know. Kind of got me on that one. I'm not sure. I think it very varies greatly on who you're working with and what you're working for as well. I personally, even when I was freelancing, never went forward on any project without getting either a proposal or a contract signed. I mean, I remember initially a long time ago, I used to just, after conversations, I would just go straight to a contract, which would obviously guarantee certain conditions and payments and things like that. And so one or the other would always be signed. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I just want to be honest here. You know, number one rule in the business world is to do just that, not to do a single leap forward until your name is on the line and their name is on the line. Mm-hmm. But, you know, the reality is so much different. I can, like, that combination.
But do you still work with people who don't sign any kind of document whatsoever? Not a contract, not a proposal, not a work agreement?
To be totally honest, the combination of productized consulting and, you know, a productized purchase and a sales page that already has all the things, you know, stated how the process is going to go.
Mm-hmm.
And the fact that I'm situated in Russia, and even if I want to sue them, that nothing's going to happen. You know, it's all a big act of trust for both parties. I can say that I rarely sign contracts. I mean, people are going to hate me for that or for declaring that. But yeah, I don't say that that's a right way forward. The right way forward is to do like Nathan says, just do that proposal and sign it off and just...
Oh, I know. There are always plenty of right ways to do things, and then things the way, you know, the way we do things, and the budget question being a huge one. You know, so many of times we've moved ahead with a proposal without getting the budget and then wondered why they said no. But, you know, it's your fault. But yeah, and I know this, but just through our experience of, particularly with the clients of Nusi, who are agencies, they've actually helped us develop Nusi further because of... they do need certain systems in place. They won't work without having a signed copy of a proposal, you know, for legal reasons. So I think it really just depends on who you're working with, your type of customer, the type of body that you are, you know, whether you're a freelancer, whether you're a studio, whether you're an agency, whether you work with financial or government bodies. I think it varies hugely. And like you said, you know, you don't sign anything, so...
Right. No, not anything, but yeah. All right, Nathan, I know you wrote at least one book on proposals, maybe two. Could you give a brief recap and then I'll link to them in the show notes?
Yeah, sure. I wrote The Creative Professional's Guide, How to Write Better Proposals, and that's over on Amazon. I wrote it now a couple of years ago, I think, maybe. So... basically, this book was written in response to all the questions we'd constantly receive, either directly via Nusi or via the blog or via email, you know, for those people that were perhaps either completely new to writing proposals or to people who had been writing proposals for a few years but weren't seeing the results that they were hoping for. So essentially, we just take them through the process from the very beginning, from initial client contact all the way through to, you know, getting it sent and getting it signed and everything in between. And I have to say now, without giving away too much of the story, is that for me, client interviews have always been almost a bigger part of the proposal process than actually writing a proposal. Mm-hmm. You know, if you could make one change to the way you write proposals today, it would be spend more time getting to know the client and their problems before you even think about putting pen to paper. That's basically what I tried to deal with in writing that book. And it's had some really great feedback. So yeah, go and have a look on Amazon. It's very cheap. So it's a worthwhile investment, I hope.
Mm-hmm. So where can people find you personally online, and where can people find Nusi?
You can find me personally online on Twitter. It's Nathan Powell 76. I'm not hugely active on Twitter anymore. Like I said, since I've managed to have some sort of lifestyle business, then I do have more of a life. So
congratulations. Can't boast the same thing yet.
So this year I made a conscious effort to actually dive out of Twitter. So I'm very rarely on there, but you can ping me on there if you need to. With regards to Nusi, well, we're at nusi.com, which is nusii.com. And we actually have a free email course available, which again takes you through the sort of five major basic concepts of proposal writing. And you can find that at nusi.com/free course.
That's fantastic. So thank you so much for sharing your knowledge today. I'm sure this episode, I can't think of any other, you know, more touchy and practical topic for an online professional than proposals, because it both touches both on strategy and on money and a client relationship. So thank you so much for giving your insight on the problem.
Thank you, Jane. Thank you for having me on. It's been great.
Yes, and I hope Nusi just blossoms because it's a great piece of software.
Thank you so much. Very kind.
All right. Have a wonderful day. Thank you, Nathan.
And you, Jane. Thanks.